The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, driving and drugs. Operating a vehicle while under the influence of drugs, be they legal or illegal, is a matter of concern to nations around the world and society as a whole. Nations deal with these concerns in various ways. This is one of the topics discussed recently at the 68th session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. A side panel was organized by the Italian NGO Forum Drog. On today's show, we're going to hear a couple of the presentations from that panel. One of the presenters was Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Currently in the United States, there are 39 jurisdictions or states that permit the use of cannabis for either medical or adult use purposes. The first state that legalized cannabis for medical purposes was California in 1996. 38 states have since followed suit. The first state to legalize cannabis for adult use was Colorado in 2012, and 23 states have followed suit. So we have in the United States now nearly a 30-year experience regulating legal medical use of cannabis and a decade-plus long experience regulating adult use cannabis. NORML believes that if somebody is going to use cannabis, they need to do so in a responsible manner, and we actually provide what are known as the principles of responsible use, which maintain that cannabis ought to be used by adults only. One must need to be respectful of the environment with which one uses cannabis. One ought to resist abuse, respect the rights of others, and specifically, we include a no driving policy, which dictates that one should not be under the influence or impaired by cannabis and ever operate a motor vehicle. Right now in the United States, it is a criminal violation to operate a motor vehicle under the influence of cannabis or any other controlled substance, regardless of whether or not that substance is deemed to be legal or illegal under state and federal law. When it comes to DUI cannabis laws or driving under the influence of cannabis, each state in the United States provides its own specific statutes and penalties specific to driving under the influence of cannabis. Currently in the United States, there are no national or federal guidelines or rules governing or providing rules with respect to how a state or a jurisdiction addresses DUI cannabis. This has been an issue that individual states have had to figure out for themselves with essentially no guidance from the federal government, which in the United States does not recognize legal cannabis, despite the fact that the majority of US states in this country do. We do have data looking at how traffic safety trends have advanced following legalization or state legalization of adult use cannabis. This is data that has been widely circulated and provided by the Insurance Institute for Traffic Safety. And what we essentially see is when you look at patterns of motor vehicle accidents following the adoption of state legalization, we really see that it's all over the map. In some states following legalization, there's been an increase in traffic accidents. In other states following legalization, there's been a sharp decrease in motor vehicle accidents. In some other jurisdictions, motor vehicle accident trends have largely stayed static. What this largely tells me is that legalizing cannabis and regulating cannabis arguably is not a particularly independent mover of traffic safety trends. Virtually all of the states on this graph adopted similar DUI cannabis laws. Their cannabis legalization laws are similar, yet the outcomes we see with respect to traffic safety over the same period of time is quite disparate. Again, this tells me that there are a number of other factors that are influencing traffic safety that are independent of the legalization of cannabis. So, how do states in the United States deal with driving under the influence of cannabis? Well, there's three specific statutory options that states impose. They either impose effect-based laws, they impose per se laws, or they impose zero tolerance per se laws. Most states, the majority of states in America, impose effect-based traffic safety laws. Under these laws, police must have evidence that A, the driver has recently ingested a controlled substance, and B, that ingestion has led to impairment of driving performance. You need to be able to establish both of those two pieces of evidence before one can move forward and charge somebody with violating the traffic safety law. Effect-based laws rely on the totality of evidence and circumstances, not simply one piece of evidence, such as, say, the result of a toxicology test. To make a case for an effect-based law, as police gather evidence at the scene, they look at the result of field sobriety testing, they look at admissions from the driver, they assess the driving performance before the pullover, they will look at the toxicology result, they will factor this totality of evidence to see if this totality of evidence establishes point A, recent drug ingestion, and point B, impairment of driving performance. This simple presence or detection of a controlled substance is not enough evidence to charge someone with a traffic safety violation in a state that has an effect-based traffic safety law. A handful of states have tried to impose what are known as per se traffic safety laws. These are laws that say a driver has violated the law if they have the presence of a certain controlled substance or its metabolite over a specific threshold in either their blood or urine. Very few states in the United States impose per se traffic safety laws for cannabis. Virtually none impose per se laws for any other controlled substance but alcohol. The reason these laws are not particularly popular is because there's no scientific consensus associating the presence of levels of either THC or its metabolite in blood or urine with either recency of drug ingestion or impairment or psychomotor impairment from cannabis. The few states that have these laws basically base their threshold on what are known as LLQs, lowest levels of quantitation. That simply means that the technology available to the state was not so sensitive. It could only go to a certain low threshold, and if it went any lower, there could be errors in the testing. These specific thresholds were not picked because there was any scientific consensus or debate that someone above the threshold would be impaired or someone below it would not be impaired. Normal opposes the imposition of per se limits for THC because these limits can't be correlated with either recency of ingestion or psychomotor impairment. As many folks in this room probably know, THC may be detectable in blood in habitual users for over 7 days, while its inert metabolite, carboxy THC, may be detectable in urine for over 100 days, long after any period of psychomotor impairment has worn off. Similar, there's a handful of states that impose a zero tolerance per se traffic safety standard. This simply says that if a person drives with any detectable level of THC or its metabolite in their blood and urine, they have violated the traffic safety law. Again, no actual evidence, demonstrable evidence of driving impairment is required for someone to be guilty under this law. Simply the presence of the drug is enough for a guilty violation. Again, normal opposes these laws because they can potentially lead to the prosecution of people who engage in state legal behavior, such as the use of cannabis in private, and who do not pose a legitimate traffic safety threat because they're no longer impaired. We have a number of recommendations of how states can provide better tools and more evidence-based policies with regard to the detection and enforcement of driving under the influence of cannabis. We strongly emphasize a move away from reliance on toxicological drug testing and toward greater use of impairment and cognitive performance testing. These include handheld technology applications like Druid or Alert Meter. These are a battery of cognitive tests that people can do on their own smartphone. This technology gauges employees or drivers' actual performance versus either their own personal baseline or an aggregate baseline using validated measures to detect cannabis impairment. Things such as short-term memory recall, perception of time, the passage of time, recognizing patterns and shapes, things of that nature. Normal has also called for the modification of field sobriety tests to include measures that are validated for identifying subjects under the influence of cannabis. Currently in the United States, field sobriety tests are used in drug driving cases, but unfortunately, the field sobriety tests that are used have never been validated for identifying any subject under the influence of a drug other than alcohol. These tests have existed for decades, but again, they've only been validated to identify people under the influence of alcohol, not for people under the influence of other drugs. And we think if these tests are going to be used to try to determine if people are under the influence of other drugs like cannabis, then they need to be modified. We've also called for greater testing and hiring of drug recognition evaluators. We have assisted in the creation of public service campaigns in Canada and elsewhere, raising awareness about the risks of cannabis and DUI and providing consumers with evidence-based guidelines. In the United States, there's very few public education campaigns of this nature. We also support the imposition of what are known as open container prohibitions on cannabis. Essentially, that says if you're driving a motor vehicle or if you are in a motor vehicle and you have cannabis that is open out of its packaging, that alone is a violation of law. We've also suggested for the provisional use of rapid response roadside oral flexion detection or fluid tests, as long as the results of these tests are not seen as prima facie evidence of either impairment or a violation of the traffic safety laws. These can be one piece of evidence, but they should not be the sole evidence that can determine either guilt or whether one has violated a traffic safety law, because again, they are not indicators of impairment. In conclusion, we believe that cannabis laws in the United States and frankly around the world are rapidly evolving, and traffic safety laws need to evolve accordingly to better discourage the public from engaging in cannabis DUI behavior, to better provide law enforcement with objective tools for identifying subjects impaired by cannabis, and finally, to move away from toxicological standards that provide limited value in determining whether a motorist is under the influence of cannabis or whether they've recently been exposed to cannabis.
That was Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, speaking on a panel entitled Driving and Substances, a New Approach to Regulation, which was held March 14th as a side event at the 68th session of the United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear more from that panel on driving and drugs. Another presenter at that panel is Georg Wirth, CEO of the German Hemp Association.
Traffic laws usually are meant to save traffic, while drug laws are meant to punish drug consumers maybe a little bit too hard set, but at the end it's a part of the game at least. But what we see is that also traffic laws are misused to punish drug consumers, because it's completely different how it's dealt in comparison to alcohol. With alcohol, we let the people drive a little bit drunken. That's no problem with the limit we have for alcohol. You can be a little bit, I am a little bit drunken when I'm driving around with the limit I'm allowed to drive. While all other drugs are zero tolerance, which means not only that if you have any amount of it in your blood or urine when you drive, you lose your driver's license. But you can also lose your driver's license already if you are just known as a consumer. If the police gets you with a pill of ecstasy in the public transport, for example, or walking around somewhere, they will make an information from the police to the office of the driver's license, which takes your driver's license away. That's it, with all illegal drugs. So we have two tracks to punish people with drugs. One is, what about traffic situations when they get you as a driver with something in your blood? And the other is just that the driver's license office will prove if you are with your mental personality good enough to drive a car. And you are obviously not if you take illegal drugs. And that is, it's nothing to do with the impact of those drugs for the safety of your driving. Because alcohol makes a lot of problems and makes it much more likely that you have a traffic accident. I think what I've read is up to sixfold if you drink a lot, the probability to make an accident. Well, for example, with cannabis, it's twofold if you are very stoned, which is about, or even less, the probability if you are tired, for example. Or let's say stimulants with a low amount may even make you drive better because you are more concentrated on coffee. But if it's illegal, like amphetamine or whatever, you lose your driver's license. And that makes no sense scientifically seen when you compare the influence of those different types of stimulants or drugs on your ability of driving. So we have these two tracks, the tracks of the office, let's say, without any circumstances in traffic, or you are no driver. This was also for cannabis the case before the year 2K. Then in, I think, 2002, our high court said, well, only possession of cannabis is not enough to take your driver's license. At least they must make such a test with you, psychological and medical test. We have to go to a psychologist and tell him about your life and why that happened, that you took cannabis once and that you had problems with your girlfriend or whatever, and if you've got a good story, then you get through. But at least they didn't take it right away. And then another very big difference made 2017 cannabis as medicine, which was legalized in 2017, which is very special because many other drugs are no medicine, probably, for a couple of times. And this is a special law where they let go a lot, because when somebody takes medicine, they say, well, that's very standardized input of the drug and a very high tolerance you get then, and after a while you can drive as safe as sober people, which is true for cannabis. And that was they really did it like this. You had no problem about that. But what about the other question? When are you driving under the influence? First, it didn't make any nobody was interested if it really was an influence, because they said, well, if you've got cannabis in your blood, then you drive under the influence. That's it. Because nobody, you know, we don't care where really the situation begins, that you have made the probability rises that you make an accident. It was just 1 nanogram THC per milliliter blood, zero. In Germany, we measure it in blood zero, why ever, I don't know. They say it's more smarter. That makes it less comparable to other countries. But it's this 1 nanogram was not like that. And then you are beginning to be a problem. It was just that time when they introduced it around 2K or a little bit before. They couldn't measure less than that because they didn't find half a nanogram. It was just like nothing in your blood. So they said, well, 1 nanogram. And then now we have this new government saying, well, no, we want to normalize cannabis. We want to legalize it, which they didn't get on the road at the end. But still, we have some half-baked decrim, like Malta, very much like Malta. But part of it was, well, we can't do that and leave this 1 nanogram on the table, because then they can grow their own, for example. They are legal consumers, but all of them will lose a driver's license, or most of them, if they get into traffic control. And at that point, we should talk about the difference between cannabis and alcohol. Maybe here everybody knows this, but maybe people look at the video and the session before, that woman asked, what about the THC in your fat or in your body that's not in your blood? How could you detect it? That's important. If you've got THC in your body, that must be a problem. But it isn't, because alcohol is very straight down, one part per thousand down every hour until zero, and then it's done. So it's a very clear road from being drunken to being with your alcohol on the street. This is completely different with THC. THC is metabolized with half halbzeit. So it's in every hour it's half, let's say. So it's going down very fast at the beginning, and at the end it's going very slowly forward. So the last nanograms in your blood will stay quite a while. And for regular consumers, which have some of the THC in the fat, for example, and it's slowly and slowly pouring out. So regular consumers have all the time some nanograms in their blood. Also, the next day, they're completely sober. They can drive like 100% perfect driver, but still they have those wrists in their blood. And that's completely different to alcohol. And we must take that into account. And that they understood and said, we can't leave it at 1 nanogram, because with this level, we punish a lot of people who are completely compliant, and then well, they are good people and wait after consumption before that work. And all studies say it's not about THC in your blood, as you heard from normal. That's not the point, how much THC is in your blood. The question is, how long is the consumption ago? Yeah. That say most of the studies. And so now they had the government was asked, or the minister for traffic had to set a new limit for THC, which is on one hand consumer friendly, that they don't are not punished or lose a driver's license when they are driving fine. And on the other hand, get them out of the roads when they are a problem. And that's a very complicated thing, much more than with us. There's no scientific guy saying, I'm the biggest expert of the world, and I say, this is the right limit. Here it is. If you are below, you are fine. If you are above, you are a problem. That doesn't work with cannabis. Doesn't work with alcohol also. Everybody knows if there is someone very much used to drinking alcohol, he probably will drive fine when I'm already drunken. But this effect is with cannabis way bigger. Some people who are not used to consume cannabis are quite few at the point where something's funny when they drive or disturbing. And others who take regular may, even with 20 or 30 nanograms or whatever, high amounts, you won't measure anything. So what does the traffic minister do now? he asked the official commission for these kind of questions. And the commission said, well, there is no scientific limit. We can't help you. And then we had another big conference, which is every year, where all those experts come together. And they also said, well, we can't do that. And that was like a fight between the old school guys, the one nanogram guys, and the others who said, well, we can't punish all those solar people. We must do something. At the end, they also said, well, you, please, government, you must revise this THC limit, but we don't tell you what's the right limit. We can't tell you. I've been there, this conference, and saw this shift or discussion between old and new guys. One of the problems is that all those experts are earning money with the prohibition situation we have. They do blood tests, they do urine tests. There are those psychologists where you must go, where you're forced to go all the time if you are catched with above 1 nanogram, for example, and they want that it tastes at 1 nanogram, otherwise they would lose clients. Mm. They would lose in the laboratories all those blood samples. That's one part of the problem, because of course they are seen as experts, and who else would be an expert? But that makes those expert community as such very conservative. At the end, the traffic minister took a new commission, an own commission, saying, well, please give me this limit. And then they made another meta-analysis, looked a little bit what's going on in other countries, looked at the biggest studies, which are most reliable, and at the end they said, well, it's 3.5 nanograms in blood serum. And that's what we have now.
3.5.
Yes, blood serum, which is compared to blood, half. Like, I mean, Canada, for example, when I'm right, has two limits, 2 and 5 nanograms, and in German version, this would be 4 and 10. So, is it good? Is it not good? We still have a lot of people who are not under the influence, who consume the day before or even 2 days before, which are above 3.5. Driving perfectly like Jesus, but still would lose their driver's license because they are above this limit. So that's why we also, that since 20 years, say like normal, let's find other ways to measure impairment.
That was Georg Wirth, CEO of the German Hemp Association, speaking on a panel entitled Driving in Substances, a New Approach to Regulation, which was held March 14th as a side event at the 68th session of the United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.